From Erie to Harrisburg, Jeanette to Pittston, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf is set to present his final budget address to the legislature. It is the last chance for some of his tax and spending proposals to be enacted. David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew are here with details. And the Fern Hollow Bridge collapse in Pittsburgh resulted in another wave of political rhetoric over the need to address our state's crumbling infrastructure. Will any action follow? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. At the moment, no excuse mail-in voting, along with those controversial drop boxes, have come to an end. Commonwealth Court has ruled that the law authorizing no excuse mail-in balloting is unconstitutional, and a state constitutional amendment would be necessary for that mechanism to be used in the future. A five-judge panel comprised of three Republicans and two Democrat judges issued the ruling, which has now been appealed to the Democrat-dominated Pennsylvania Supreme Court, setting up the strong possibility the Commonwealth Court's ruling could be overturned. The next scheduled election in Pennsylvania is the May 17th primary, which will feature open seat races for governor and U.S. senator. Pennsylvania Democrats held their party endorsement meeting last weekend and bestowed their blessing on Attorney General Josh Shapiro's campaign for governor. No surprise there, in that Shapiro is unopposed for the nomination. But in the hotly contested race for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate, the party was unable to arrive at an endorsement decision. Congressman Connor Lamb received the most votes, but fell short of the threshold required for endorsement, with Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman finishing second. Pennsylvania Republicans meeting this weekend to consider their endorsement options. Philadelphia City Councilman Bobby Hennen was forced to resign his seat following his conviction on corruption charges, along with Democratic power broker Johnny Doc Daugherty. Now party leaders have selected State Representative Mike Driscoll to fill the seat. He will have to seek election to a full term next year. Driscoll's state House seat, as are all seats in the House of Representatives, is up for election this year. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. For the past 7 years, Governor Tom Wolf has delivered a budget address chock full of big spending and higher tax proposals. Will his final budget address be any different? For answers, we turn to our Capitol Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me here in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Great to be here again, David. Thank you.
And a special announcement today, wanting to welcome as an official permanent member of your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve?
Thank you, David. I'm very much delighted to be part of the team.
Outstanding. And our old friend Matt Briette will come back and visit us occasionally. He promises. We'll see how that goes. So it's a busy week in Harrisburg. We are looking towards the upcoming budget address by His Excellency the Governor, Tom Wolf, his eighth and final budget address in that exalted office. But there was news from Pittsburgh the other day that really hit hard. You may have heard about the bridge that collapsed in Frick Park in Pittsburgh. And, you know, thanks be to God, nobody was hurt or killed. But again, it was a catastrophe. And that the question then becomes, well, what happened? Of course, you know, you've got President Biden coming in using this as an excuse to fund more infrastructure and spend more money. Well, in fact, the city of Pittsburgh was responsible for the maintenance and safety of that bridge. And that it was known to have been in very, very bad shape. It was documented over the years, and that there was lots of money for these purposes, but rather than working through the backlog of projects and maintenance, that you had the city of Pittsburgh spending millions of dollars on things like bike lanes. I mean, I guess that it would have been $1.5 million to properly secure and repair that bridge that collapsed. And then you learned that the city of Pittsburgh, you know, spent $16 million trying to abate light pollution. It's just, you know, as we go into this state budget, I want people to keep in mind, I guess, two things. Number one, it's not how much is spent, it's how the money is spent. And also that, in my experience, the more responsibilities that government takes on, the less well it does any of the things that it's supposed to do.
And really, it seems as if the government tends to focus its energies on the nice-to-haves, the discretionary items, like you mentioned, whether it be bike lanes or light pollution abatement, and they refuse to focus on the need to have, the must-haves, like making sure the bridges don't collapse when there are cars and buses driving over them. And again, as you pointed out, David, in this particular case on the bridge over Frick Park, it was well known that that bridge was in trouble. It had been accelerated years and years ago from every 3 years inspection to every 1 year inspection because it was clear that it had structural issues. There were complaints turned in, reports turned in by citizens who saw with alarm missing pieces of steel from underneath the bridge. And the city replied that they had closed the matter, which no one knows what they did, but obviously it wasn't enough.
Correct.
And you had that same pattern repeating itself. That's a micro or a small scale example. But if you look at Pennsylvania, some years ago, our state legislature and former governor enacted a huge gas tax increase, ostensibly for the purpose of funding transportation infrastructure. But again, in many cases, the nice-to-haves won out over the must-haves. So bridges like the bridge over Frick Park didn't get fixed, but bike lanes were added across the Commonwealth, sound barriers, light abatement, beautification, things that are nice to have. But when you have bridges that are about to fall down, you better focus on the must-haves. And now at the federal level, same thing.
Yes.
The big infrastructure package advertises fixing all the infrastructure. Only about 10% of it actually goes to fixing infrastructure.
Correct. Correct.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I sort of stood with my jaw agape when I heard the president, when he was in Pittsburgh, the day that bridge collapsed, when he says, "We're going to fix them all." And I just couldn't believe that because, I mean, it comes down to, you know, priorities. And it's just like Steve said, that such a small percentage of the infrastructure bill is actually going to go toward bridges in the grand scheme of things, that we're not going to fix them all. There's no plans to fix them all. I mean, we're going to make a dent. But I think it really comes down to, you know, what we prioritize as priorities for our government. And it's like you said, there are nice to haves and there are must haves and hard infrastructure, roads and bridges are must haves, and they are an essential part of government. So when you're talking about things like light pollution, bike lanes, and they're nice to haves, but they should come second.
And Rebecca, you are absolutely right. And for everyone who hears the sound of my voice, this falls on you because we must demand that our government responsibly provide those core services for which we pay taxes, things like public safety and the integrity of our roadways and our bridges. Everybody has known the biggest disasters that would face the U.S. would be, number one, terror attack in New York. Number two, earthquake in San Francisco. Number three, hurricane in New Orleans. And that over the years, the federal government provided the money to the city of New Orleans to upgrade the levees on Lake Pontchartrain to be ready for the hurricane when it came. And the city of New Orleans spent that money on parks and rec and other things, bells and whistles, shiny objects that the voters would take note of that would get city council and the mayor votes. And they left the city undefended for when the hurricane finally arrived. And like it's immoral. It's sickening. And yet it happened.
Yeah, I mean, Steve mentioned the gas tax. That money that passed in Act 89, which increased our gas taxes and our registration fees, you know, across the board, that money was supposed to go to infrastructure. Much of it does, but a lot of it is diverted away. It's spent on state police, for example, which also extremely important. Obviously, we support our state police, but that should not be coming out of road and bridge funding,
correct.
Which it is now. If you look at PennDOT's budget, actually, only about half, less than half, is actually spent on real roads and bridges. So there are other things in PennDOT's budget, like transit, like rail, like bike lanes, things like that, that actually take up a whole lot of the money that PennDOT has to spend.
And I need to editorialize here because, again, as exactly as you say, Rebecca, the Motor Vehicle License Fund, which is our fuel taxes that we all pay at the pump, those funds can only be spent on infrastructure, roads, and bridges. That the rationalization was made that because the state police patrol our highways, that they should be funded partially from that fund, and perhaps some funding from that is appropriate. But Governor Ed Rendell shifted more of the state police funding out of the Motor Vehicle License Fund to open up more budget capacity in the general fund so that he could then go and spend more on his own priorities.
It's all about priorities and watching very careful what those priorities are.
And there's also a public safety factor when you think about infrastructure. You know, often we think transportation infrastructure allows our economy to grow. And of course it does, and that's vital over the long term. But there's also a direct and immediate public safety aspect when you have bridges that are either falling down, as is the case we saw in Pittsburgh the other day, or we see public infrastructure that's weight limited, where they say, well, this bridge is in such bad shape, trucks can't go over it anymore, so we'll put weight limits on it. What happens in all those cases is fire trucks can't respond.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And so when normally if fire stations are strategically located around a city or a suburban area or country area, they have routes they use most efficient to reach the point of any alarm. And someone's life is literally hanging in the balance, and it could be a matter of seconds to save that life.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from PMA. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So this brings us now to the matter at hand, which is the Governor Wolf coming forward, giving his budget address for fiscal year 22-23. And, certainly you've heard lots of noise from the legislative Democrats that they would like to take all of the remaining Biden bucks from the federal stimulus and just blow it all at once. Thereby, you know, porking up the baseline for spending and increasing the delta between what we would be committed to spending and what we would have on hand in the out years. Now, obviously, that's a terribly bad idea and that wiser heads have prevailed. But what are your both of you, what are your expectations going into next week?
Well, as you pointed out, David, the Democratic caucuses, both the Senate Democrats and the House Democrats and the Democratic governor are all proposing essentially a strategy of spend, 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 spend. And here we are in the midst of this inflation that's already been triggered by all the government spending that's been thrown around by Washington like money was candy. Now we're seeing the state government wanting to do the same thing. We are anticipating that the Republican-controlled legislature will stand against that and won't allow the governor and the Democratic caucuses to move forward with more just out of control, spend, spend, spend policy. And there are some restrictions that would make sense. Spending can rise in any state because inflation rises and population rises. And there's a measure we call the Taxpayer Protection Act Index.
Yes.
And that is a blend of the actual rate of inflation plus population growth. And if you look at that for this year, we're looking at about 3.46% would be acceptable growth of government in order to maintain the current size of government, not let it get any bigger in proportion to the economy.
Yes, yes.
So that does allow for a little extra spending, but it's got to be done wisely, and it's got to be focused on things that are going to pay off over the long term, such as refunding our now underwater unemployment compensation funding.
Yes.
Setting aside more money in our rainy day accounts, which we have a very minimal amount of Pennsylvania right now to deal with any future emergencies. Having come through this COVID emergency, now that's got to be a priority, is to make sure we have stability to deal with any future possible emergencies we face on the economic front. We've got to make sure that we're not setting up the spending of any of these federal funds in ways that are going to force us to then spend more state dollars in future years to maintain
Correct.
Those programs.
Because that was the trap that was set for Governor Corbett.
Big mistake that was set back in the day under the Obama stimulus, and we cannot fall into that trap again. So those are just some parameters that we would expect, and really we're asking members of the legislature to think about as they move into listening to Governor Wolf's budget address and addressing his proposal.
What do you think, Rebecca?
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking about you mentioned the Taxpayer Protection Act, Steve, and it's a great idea, just constraining state spending. And what I love about it is it actually forces that prioritization that we just talked about.
Yes.
So if infrastructure is a high priority, it forces the General Assembly and the governor to get together and talk about how to make it a priority. Rather than just throwing money at problems over and over again, it forces some decision making over what actually is a priority. And I think we agree infrastructure is a priority. So we're curious about what comes out of the governor's address and future budget discussions about transportation funding, because this seems to be, you know, a hot issue on the table. We already talked about the diversion of state police funds. An alternative funding mechanism for those state police dollars, I think, is something we need to look for. There were other alternative funding proposals that have come up, because, I mean, the thing is, the gas tax is not raising the sufficient funds currently. And part of that is because cars are so much more fuel efficient than they were in the past. So
right.
we're just not using as much gas. So there are a lot of other options on the table. And one of which is actually, actually doing a bond, which would be a much more palatable and affordable way to finance big infrastructure.
Right. Stable and predictable.
Right.
The way you take out a mortgage to buy a house.
Exactly. So rather than doing things like taxing our traveling public with bridge tolling, which is what the governor's looking at doing for 9 interstate bridges, rather than continuing to tax on things like that, we would look for some more sustainable solutions for transportation funding. So I'm interested to see what comes out of that.
I'm curious to see as to whether there are a number of really bad ideas that have been Wolf perennials. And just curious to see if he trots them out one last time to collect the whole set, make it, 8 out of 8.
Or 0 out of 8, actually.
Well,
we hope.
In terms of what he has gotten past, yes.
Yeah.
That he's constantly sought an additional and duplicative tax on natural gas production to render Pennsylvania less competitive. That's been beaten back each time, and I believe that would also be a complete non-starter with the General Assembly. Also, he has been pressing for increased tax complexity to try to get more money out of business taxpayers through mandatory unitary combined reporting, which is a bad idea. I don't have enough time to explain right now, but I'm at your service. Email me at taylor@pamanufacturers.org for more info on that. But it does seem as though in a lot of ways that Governor Wolf has kind of checked out, that he seems very disengaged and disinterested. And so I wouldn't be surprised, cueing off of that, whether this budget proposal is actually somewhat less aggressive than years past.
He's also often brought up raising the minimum wage. And I haven't heard him talk about that yet.
Yeah,
in the context
he's been,
of this
he's
budget,
been on but, that hobby horse again.
But I think we can expect that his spend numbers are going to be big. Far in excess of the Taxpayer Protection Act index, and I think we can expect that he's going to be asking for a number of policies that would be counter to the success and prosperity of Pennsylvania citizens, things that would put us in a deeper hole in terms of government spending, and things that would not address some of those urgent must-haves we talked about, in particular transportation infrastructure.
So it'll be again for us Harrisburg insider folks that it's the most wonderful time of the year, and certainly there'll be lots of PCN type drama on the pageantry of the governor's budget address and the legislative responses of con and pro that follow that. You know, of course, it also makes one wonder what the next budget address will look like, mm-hmm. that in the year's time that we're going to have a new governor. Whether it will be Attorney General Josh Shapiro, who's the Democrat running unopposed, or one of his Republican challengers. You know, Pennsylvania needs – we need a big directional shift. Our friend State Representative Frank Ryan has been saying for the last 6 years that Pennsylvania has 5 years to get our financial house in order. And so he would tell you that we're beyond the point where we're going to safely land the plane, that now it's about controlling the crash landing.
And you raise an excellent point, because this budget that we're going to be wrangling over for the next several months in Pennsylvania is really the easier budget as compared to those down year budgets that we're looking at, because of some of the structural factors.
Mm-hmm.
And so the revenues available this year, again, and they need to be used wisely because they're only going to be available this year. Some of these excess funds, some tax revenues that came in higher than expected, those sorts of things. They're one-time good problems to deal with, but they've got to be dealt with responsibly or they're going to put us in a deeper hole for those tough out years.
Yeah, and this is the budget the new governor will come into, too. It will be the budget that he takes over. So he or she.
Yes. Well, to be continued. This is sadly all the time we have for this week. But again, welcome to our new permanent team member, Steve Bloom. Steve, where can the people learn more about you and what you do?
Thank you, David. The CommonwealthFoundation.org is our website. CommonwealthFoundation.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people find you?
Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association is at PMTA.org.
Fantastic. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. From Steve, Rebecca, and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. It was like a scene from the film Groundhog Day. The collapse of the Fern Hollow Bridge in Pittsburgh's Frick Park unleashed a torrent of rhetoric from elected officials about the urgency of addressing the nation's infrastructure needs. Such talk is as perennial an occurrence as the appearance of the famous rodent on Gobbler's Knob. President Biden, ironically, was scheduled to be in Pittsburgh the very day that the bridge collapsed to tout his misnamed infrastructure bill and promptly promised to fix all of the Steel City's over 400 bridges. Nice words, but as improbable as an early spring. Never one to not try and score political points during a crisis, Governor Tom Wolf weighed in, blasting those Republican members of Congress who voted against the recently passed infrastructure bill. This despite the fact only a minor portion of spending contained within that legislation will be expended on traditional infrastructure such as roads and bridges. That Pennsylvania's roads and bridges are in such dire condition is reflective of yet another failing of the Wolf administration. Tom Wolf has been governor of Penns Woods for 7 very long years. During that time, his administration has botched everything from the COVID-19 pandemic response to the 2020 elections. Former Governor Tom Corbett began the process of coming to grips with the Commonwealth's traditional infrastructure needs. In November of 2013, he signed what KDKA-TV termed, quote, the most expansive and expensive transportation funding bill in recent years, promising major new investments. To fund those new investments, the legislation signed by the Republican governor increased taxes on oil companies that ultimately translated into consumers paying 40 cents per gallon more at the pumps. The promise was that the roads and bridges would finally get fixed. But the next year, Tom Corbett lost his bid for re-election, and 7 years later, his successor has failed to deliver on the promise. Our roads and bridges remain in a state of advanced disrepair, with Biden and Wolf calling for even more dollars to be poured down the infrastructure rat hole. To be fair, the failing is not Tom Wolf's alone. Pennsylvania's macro transportation funding paradigm is a mishmash of policies that require a fiscal GPS to navigate. For example, billions of dollars have been diverted from the Motor License Fund, supposedly earmarked for road and bridge repair, to help fund the Pennsylvania State Police. While, of course, the Pennsylvania State Police should be fully funded, It is fiscal folly to siphon money from the road and bridge repair budget. In addition to higher gas taxes, motorists have experienced steep annual fare increases to drive on the Pennsylvania Turnpike because a botched scheme to toll I-80 left the Turnpike with a requirement to make annual $450 million payments to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation with no corresponding revenue stream. That requirement is set to decrease to $50 million in the 2022-23 fiscal year, creating yet another hole in PennDOT's budget. And what of President Biden's highly touted infrastructure bill? How much of the spending contained within that legislation will go to repair roads and bridges? Very little, actually. The bill authorizes $1.2 trillion in new spending. Of that, just $110 billion is earmarked for roads and bridges. While $110 billion is a lot of money, it represents a very small part of the overall spending contained within the legislation. Biden's infrastructure bill lards billions on left-wing social agenda priorities. It is also rife with regulations and restrictions designed to enforce so-called social justice, equity, and climate activist policies. The goal of the bill is furthering the fundamental reset of the American economy pushed by congressional extremists, not addressing the nation's roads and bridges problems in a meaningful way. What can we conclude from all of this? First, after 30 years in the U.S. Senate and 8 as Vice President, Joe Biden, along with Tom Wolf, who has served the past 7 years as governor, have not only failed to address infrastructure needs, but rather have, through inaction and/or ineptitude, contributed significantly to the problem. Second, despite lofty rhetoric and political blame-casting, neither the federal nor the state administrations have developed, much less implemented, any coherent, comprehensive strategy for fixing our roads and bridges. Photo ops and calls for more spending will not solve the problem. Development of a coherent transportation infrastructure policy, streamlining of the process, and competent administration will be required, and soon, before more bridges end up at the bottom of ravines. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And once again, it's time to talk about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, the premier grassroots conservative event. It will be held this year, April 1st and 2nd, at the Penn Harris Hotel in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Fox News host, former Congressman Trey Gowdy. The conference will include forums spotlighting candidates for governor of Pennsylvania and U.S. Senator. An added feature this year is a pre-conference election integrity summit to be held on Thursday, March 31st. As always, there will be speakers, panel presentations, and workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, which include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Thank you.